This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Work. It's DCR.
So Gallo a couple of days ago.
Gallo launches this ball deep to right field and gone.
Anthony Rizzo yesterday.
Rizzo pummels one to right. It is gone.
If you're a Yankee fan, you can't complain about it. You're getting two guys who have power that can go off at any moment.
Rizzo serves the ball to center field. That one's hit well up into the wind and gone.
You have to go all in to try to give yourself the best chance to compete while you have that championship window open. If you're the Yankees, you're in that same boat. This is the time that you have to go for it.
This is DCR on 98.7 ESPN.
That's right, indeed. Hour number two on a busy Friday morning. Dan Grasso, Chris Canty. It's DCR. Here on 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. A lot of Yankees in that first hour, making the big moves, bringing in Joey Gallo, bringing in Anthony Rizzo. By the way, one other thing I forgot to mention about Joey Gallo, Chris. You're familiar with, you know, all these, like, big-time analytical websites, and baseball's littered with them. Like, you know, they have all these different StatCast-type things and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But our good friends over at Baseball Savant, which is a really, really cool website there for those that want to just, you know, dive into little nuances of the game and whatnot, they looked up Joey Gallo this season and all of his batted balls, as they like to say, meaning every single one that he put in play this year. I don't know what the exact number was, but if you take all of his batted balls that ended up being outs, for that matter, in all the other ballparks across the sport, there was at least, I want to say, 20 to 30 that would have been home runs if they were hitting Yankee Stadium.
Well, there you go. That's exactly what you're looking for, right? Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of those would be on the short porch over there in right field. Which is why you want to bring in a big lefty bat like him. Like, you got a lefty bat for power. Like, that's why you're going after these guys. It's not just to have the benefit of being able to break up the right-handed heavy order, but it's also to have the opportunity to take advantage of your own ballpark. I mean, that's one of the things that Brian Cashman kind of, you know, skirted over when he built this team coming into this season. It's just one of those things, like, why wouldn't you take advantage of something that you have offered up to you for half of your games? It didn't make any sense when he did it. And so I'm glad that he's finally coming around to being able to add those lefty bats to this lineup. Hopefully that gives this team a little more offensive punch, because this is not the offense that we expected to see coming into this year. It's just not.
No doubt about that. Now, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So we did a lot of the Yankee stuff here. Let's talk about the other team in town with the New York Mets. First, let me say this, okay? And you see it all the time, certainly on social media as well, if, you know, Mets Twitter and all that stuff. Chris, I get it, right? By the letter of the law, the Mets are in first place, okay? You also have to acknowledge, though, that the reason they're in first place is because the National League East is the worst division in the sport. I say that the National League East is the NFC East. That's what it is. It's the NFC East, and the Mets are essentially the Washington football team. That's who they are. They just so happen by the
Well, at least, Dan, the only
division.
Difference is at least you have a team that has a winning record leading the division.
Fair. But you do have 162 cracks at it, though. So,
Fair point.
I mean? Like, if you are in first place, I would hope that would be the case. And nobody wants to take it from them. But this series against the Atlanta Braves, again, is another reminder that this team is severely flawed. They've got a long way to go before you can feel confident about their chances of doing anything in the month of October, if they even get there. You lost a series at home to the Atlanta Braves, one of the teams that's chasing you. All right, it's 3 out of 5. And I don't know, see, I don't know what it is like in the minds of the fans. And maybe, you know, they can fill us in at 800-919-ESPN. The Mets, to their credit, they've had a lot of dramatic wins this year. Like, the Yankees have had a lot of gut-punching losses. The Mets have had a lot of dramatic wins. The most recent being a couple of nights ago, right? Where Conforto makes that great throw.
Yeah, he
guns
down
Almonte right
at the plate. Yeah, that was
play at the
great
plate. Dramatic, exciting win. It's essentially the equivalent of a walk-off win, but defensively. Okay, so mm-hmm. A dramatic win. You're feeling great about yourself. The thing, though, that you need to caution folks is that those dramatic wins, they don't count for like 3 wins or 4 wins mm-hmm. in the standings.
Nope.
They still just count for 1. So You had the dramatic win, and then even one of the games, you know, the one of the games they won in the doubleheader was kind of dramatic, right? They won a 1-0 game in the doubleheader yep. earlier in the week. But you still lost the series 3 out of 5. You came back the day after that dramatic Conforto play, and he got lit up again by the Atlanta Braves, who hit a bunch of home runs. Austin Riley, by the you're mark my words.
Seven of his 21 home runs against the Mets.
Austin Riley, you're seeing like the progression. Freddie Freeman is taking the baton, and look, Freddie's not going to be around forever. You know, he's already into the latter part of his career. Freddie is passing the baton from, you know, as Mets killer in an Atlanta Brave uniform to Austin Riley. So for the next 10 years, Met fans are going to have to deal with Austin Riley killing them. But they get beat up yesterday, they lose the series. And more importantly, the thing that I look at, and this is the cause for concern, Taijuan Walker has not been the same pitcher since the All-Star break. He has not been. I'm willing to give him a pass for that first one in Pittsburgh where he didn't make it out of the first inning. He had that fluky play with the foul ball, not foul
yeah,
ball.
Yeah, that was weird.
It
that
blew
weird,
up yeah. on him. But three starts since the break, he's got an ERA over 15. He can't keep the ball in the ballpark. He's getting hit around left and right. And not to say that this is the guy you expected when the Mets signed him, and it got very little fanfare. But he went out and pitched like an all-star in the first half of the season here. So he was one of the reasons. I said at the all-star break, Chris, the Mets MVP in the first half, not named Jacob DeGrom, was Taijuan Walker.
Mm.
I don't know how this team is going to continue on their path to the playoffs if Taijuan Walker doesn't snap out of this like the way he's been pitching the last couple times out.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to find a way to get back right. It hasn't been great since the All-Star break. Now, I know that Luis Rojas and both him and Walker came out after yesterday's game, and they said the stuff is not as big of an issue as the pitch selection is. So, I mean, hopefully he can find a way to be able to figure that part of it out. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. The strength of this team is the starting pitching, and if the guys in your rotation aren't right, then it's going to be a big, big problem. You're already shorthanded a little bit without having Jacob DeGrom. Hopefully he's back sooner rather than later. But, I mean, Taijuan Walker's got to be one of those guys that steps up. I mean, in the absence of all those other guys, Taijuan Walker has to pitch like an all-star, and he just has not in his last 3 or 4 starts. So, I mean, this is one of those that you do have to have concern about. But the one thing I will say is there is some good news for the Mets on the pitching front. Cookie Carrasco is going to make a start pretty mm-hmm. soon here. So, I mean, you got to feel good about being able to bring somebody with that type of experience back into the fold. Jacob DeGrom is going to come back soon. So, I mean, you'll be able to fortify that rotation, but they still got to make some moves before the deadline this afternoon. Like, I look at this team and I'm like, all right, the pitching has been really, really good. The bullpen has been a pleasant surprise. But the offense has been absolutely abysmal. They got to figure something out. You're talking about this set against the Braves. They've scored a total, Dan, of 11 runs in 5 games.
That's awful.
That's awful. I mean, they're next to last in terms of runs scored this season, right in front of the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's not where you want to be. So for a team that's winning their division, I just feel like Steve Cohen and Zach Scott, they owe it to this squad to be able to go out there and bring in some offensive firepower, whether it's one of those guys from the Cubs or somebody else from around Major League Baseball. They got to bring in some punch to this lineup. When you look at this lineup on paper, you would think that they would be capable of producing more runs than they have. But the fact is, they haven't been getting the job done, and you got to bring in some help to see if they can kind of get that turned around.
Inconsistent. That's the way to put it. It's been inconsistent. You know, like Alonso's got the home run stroke, you know, certainly since the break. And yesterday he hits one to the upper deck. That's great, though. But you can't live and die by the home run. You just can't. And not enough guys in this lineup are pulling their weight and moving runners along and getting hits. You're absolutely right. You hit it right on the head. And that's a problem. You know, when you mentioned the Pittsburgh Pirates, okay, the Mets, you know, had a rough time against the Pittsburgh Pirates right before and after the All-Star break.
Yep.
And now you got a Cincinnati Reds team coming in here who the Mets handle in Cincinnati all the time, just like they did last week. But now you got them coming in, and the Reds are playing good baseball. Joey Votto, by the way, is the hottest hitter on the planet. He's homered in, what is it up to now, 6 or 7 straight games, which he's like one shy of the MLB record of tying it, which is 8 in a row.
Mm.
So this is not going to be easy this weekend. And, you know, you mentioned Cookie Carrasco. it's tough to sit here and put a lot of faith in a guy who hasn't thrown a pitch yet this year.
Yeah.
Right? And you know that they're going to operate with kid gloves regarding him. He's going to be on a pitch count. Tonight, I mean, shoot, he might not even go five innings tonight. They might get him out of there after four. So it's going to be a natural progression. They're being super-duper cautious over Jacob deGrom, as they should.
Yes.
Making sure that he's healthy. I agree with you. They have to go out there and do something. And one last thing. You want to take a step back and you want to examine how this team has played. This division, which is the worst in the sport, it's defined by mediocrity up and down. You know what their record is against the division, Chris? Against the worst division in the sport, the teams they play more often than anybody else, it's 21-21.
500.
What does that tell you? That's not good.
No, it's not good. I mean, listen, they've got to figure out a way to try to separate themselves from this division. I mean, it's funny because it felt like the Mets had an opportunity the last couple of months to kind of put some space between them and the rest of the NL East, and they just haven't been able to do it. Now, a big part of that has been dealing with injuries, guys being out of the lineup, but I mean, it just feels like they've let these other teams hang around, teams like the Phillies, teams like the Braves, and it worries me because you feel like eventually that's going to catch up to you. Somehow it's going to come back to bite you. So you hope that doesn't happen, and you hope that before the deadline, Zach Scott goes out and makes some moves that bring in some more talent and infuse this roster with the guys that they need in order to kind of do that and take more of a stranglehold over the division. But, I mean, it's one of those things that worries me, man. You just, when you have an opportunity to put the rest of the teams in your division away, you got to take advantage of it, and it just feels like the Mets haven't done that this year.
That's Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. And DCR on 98.7 ESPN is presented by Progressive Insurance. Another thing that's going to return tonight, the black jerseys. The black uniforms. Mets made a big deal about that. You know,
oh,
hey,
yeah.
We're bringing the
Steve
black
Cohen
jerseys.
Made a big deal about that.
Steve Cohen.
On social media, yeah.
And look, I mean, if you're asking me, I mean, the black jerseys are nice and everything, but, you know, it seems like they're more concerned about the uniforms and the black jerseys than they are going out there and winning games. You know, like the jerseys are nice and whatever, it's cool, but go win games. I mean, I don't mind the black jerseys, and I like the fact that they're only going to be worn on Fridays when they're at home, so I think there's only like four times for the remainder of the season. Like, I think it's cool once in a while. I just didn't like it. I was never a fan back in the day, like 20 years ago, when that almost became like their primary uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like I know
they
what
were wearing
about.
Them
yeah.
all the time, and I'm like, this ain't the Mets. You know, the Mets have a nice classic uniform, you know, and I didn't think we needed to be doing all this other extracurricular stuff. I get it. It's all about money and, you know, selling as many as they can. So I'll take it in spurts. I just don't need them every single time out.
Dan, you're coming dangerously close to sounding like that guy that's saying, get off my lawn.
I got one foot on the lawn.
You're being that guy right now, man. I mean, those black jerseys are awfully swaggy. Awfully swaggy. I think the last time they wore them was like 2012. But I mean, right. bringing them back. I mean, those things are clean. Like,
but it became overkill. It became overkill.
I hear what you're saying, but those things are awesome. The black jerseys. I don't know anybody that doesn't like them except you.
But let me ask you this: Giant football.
Mm.
If the Giants ran out there with black jerseys each and every Sunday, would that feel right?
No, and I mean, the Giants did once upon a time have those red jerseys. The problem is they couldn't win in the red jerseys.
Always
but I
against
mean,
Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, they had those red jerseys on, and I guess they ended up putting those away. But I don't think it was because the fans didn't like it. I think it's because they couldn't win a damn game in them. But no, nah, man, I am here for the alternate jersey. Now, once we get to the playoffs, I want to see teams in their classic unis. But in the regular season, I mean, like you said, you got 162 regular season games. What's wrong with breaking up the routine jerseys with a little bit of swag with the black jerseys? I don't see a problem with it.
Like I said, alternate. Alternate is the operative word there.
There you
alternate,
go. I got you.
Not permanent.
I got you.
I mean, if you remember those playoff runs in 99 and 2000, you know, the Piazza Alfonso teams
the,
and whatnot.
The black jerseys, yeah.
Dude, they were wearing the black jerseys even in the playoffs. Like, all those memorable
well, listen, if
moments
that's what it takes to get the guys going, Dan, if the black jerseys is what it takes to get the guys going and get them into the playoffs, then how could you not be your boy as a Mets fan?
If well, the they went to the World like, Series hey, 5 years ago without him. You know, hey. Maybe that'll recapture some memories and all that stuff here. But no, it'll be cool to see. Like I said, it's been a while. I like it every once in a while. I just don't need this. Because the Mets got a beautiful classic uniform. The pinstripes, the white, like orange, blue. It's classic. It's classic.
Hopefully we got some new guys wearing that uniform once we get on the other side of the deadline today. That's what you have to hope. That has to happen. I don't know how Zach Scott can sit pat.
I agree with you 100%. 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Zach Wilson going to be back, CC, finally, to start training camp here for the New York Jets. Only missed a couple of practices, which I guess isn't the end of the world. But he's signed, sealed, and delivered. Will be out there on the practice field. And I guess by reading all the accounts of the first 2 days' worth of practice, the James Morgan, Mike White experiment didn't exactly go swimmingly as far as operating the offense. And you know what's the funniest thing about it? Like, you read the accounts, they didn't even really throw the ball more than 10 yards in any of the plays that were rung up there for the offense. So, yeah, I think everybody's going to be happy to have number two back out there.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, right now in Jets camp, like prior to Zach Wilson signing his contract, Jamison Crowder had thrown the most passes in an NFL game. Like, I mean, that's your slot receivers.
Sneaky
I mean,
good
that's,
arm. Sneaky that's, good that, arm.
That's the state of affairs when it comes to the depth chart behind the number two overall pick. But, I mean, this is something that they had to get done. I really don't know what Joe Douglas was waiting on in terms of being able to consummate the deal and get Zach Wilson into camp. Like, it's not like he didn't see this coming. It's not like he didn't know that, you know, the offset language and the cash flow were going to be issues when negotiating with his agent. I mean, what else are you going to negotiate when it comes to these rookie contracts? They're all slotted anyway, right?
Right.
We knew forever that Zach Wilson was going to get a $35.1 million contract with a $22.9 million signing bonus. Like, everybody knew the numbers already. It was just a matter of, okay, when is he going to get his signing bonus? All of that paid out, and then what is going to be the offset language, if any, in the contract? And so that's one of those things I will never understand if you're the Jets. I mean, he's such an important part of your program moving forward. He's the future of your franchise. Like, why would you want to mess around with that? That should have been something that got done weeks ago, and it's not something that should have bled over into the first couple of days of training camp. But, hey, they got the deal done. He's done. In camp, and now they can kind of move forward. You know, these guys, you know, Rob Saleh, Joe Douglas, and now future franchise quarterback Zach Wilson all together.
It'll be forgotten by this afternoon, right? As soon as he's on the field, as long as he's out there in the huddle slinging it around, all the contract stuff is going to be forgotten. And,
yeah.
And that's the right thing. What won't be forgotten, though, and I'll be heading out there, by the way, you know, after we do finish the show today. In a couple
oh, okay.
Hours, make
all
my
right.
Maiden
so you get an up close and personal look
that's
at
right.
it.
That's right. Yeah, got to survey the troops because, you know, you got to, you know, start getting some info on the team for our broadcast this year right here on 98.7 ESPN.
Look at you with the shameless plug.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, we're a team, right? We're a family. You
absolutely.
Hey, it'll be here before you know it. First game, what, in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean,
Jets-Giants, first preseason game?
First preseason game, but, I mean, the start of the NFL regular season was 6 weeks from yesterday.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's literally right around the corner. I mean, we got Cowboys-Bucks.
Whew.
I mean, that's gonna be exciting. But, no, you're right. I mean, it's here now, and I can't wait for it. I mean, I'm glad that Zach Wilson is in camp. I'm excited to see what he looks like. As all the other Jets fans are excited about him, the kid has tremendous physical attributes. And I just want to see how Mike LaFleur and Rob Saleh deploy that, what the offense is going to look like with Zach Wilson as your quarterback, with all of the weapons that they got him, and then, of course, that offensive line. Like, I'm interested to see how it's all going to come together. Quite frankly, it can't be worse than what it was last year with Sam Darnold and Adam Gase. I mean, that was the worst offense in the NFL, so I think it'll be markedly better. But I think that this Zach Wilson kid, he's got something, man. I'm just interested to see how it all unfolds. It feels like the franchise has set him up much better to have success than they did with Sam Darnold. So now, I mean, everybody just wants to wait and see what happens when the games roll around and see what the kid can do.
Quarterback-friendly scheme. And you hear that a lot, right? It's a very quarterback-friendly offense. But it is. You know, West Coast system that they're bringing in. And he and Chris, look, he is an ideal fit for it. An ideal fit for it. It's about getting the ball out quick. You know that, you know, the modified West Coast, the Shanahan version of the offense is what it's kind of been tailored to. And Mike LaFleur bringing that over. Get the ball out quick. You're going to see a lot of motions and stuff like that, which you didn't see for the last 2 years under the predecessor. Which, you know, you mentioned his name, which seemed almost like
he's who shall not be named at this point. We're not going to even speak his name.
Well, we can name him. I mean, okay. But, I mean, everybody saw it. I mean, I don't think I have to bring it up again. I think we're turning a page. You want to accentuate the positives here, and hopefully there's a lot more of it than it's been the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But You got to be excited about if you're a Jet fan, the personnel that they brought in. This offense, you know, has a chance to be at times exciting this year. And certainly compared to the standard that they set the last two seasons, you don't really have much to work off of there. But I think it will be. The thing, though, that is reinforced by what's happened over the last couple of days in regards to the contract and with Zach Wilson and everything is, how much longer do they wait? Because they can't roll into the season with this as their depth chart at quarterback. They can wax poetic about the James Morgans, the Mike Whites, and all those guys. And, you know, they've been here. They've been learning the offense. They're hard workers and all that stuff. God forbid anything ever happens to Zach Wilson in a game this season to where he can't play. You got to have a better insurance policy than those two guys. You have to.
Well, not even that, though, Dan. And I hear where you're coming from with the insurance policy piece of it. But you want to have a veteran presence in that quarterback room just to help Zach Wilson learn the ropes and what it means to be an NFL quarterback, like learning how to break down film and, you know, kind of some of the more nuanced stuff from the position like that. That's the value of having one of those veteran backups. Like, that's the value of having a guy like Colt McCoy in the room, like with Daniel Jones, or the value of having a guy like Brian Hoyer that's still on your roster. Like, those are guys that can, you know, Josh McCown was a guy that was with the Jets. Like, there's tremendous value in having those veteran guys around young quarterbacks because they're an extension of the coaching staff in the meeting rooms and on the field. And those guys can kind of tell, you know, your young quarterback, you know, what's happening in real time, what they're seeing from the sidelines, and kind of coach him up in between series. Like, there's a lot of value in that, and the fact that the Jets haven't addressed that need for this team, especially knowing what they have invested in Zach Wilson, to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, we'll see what happens as training camp unfolds. We'll see if anybody becomes available that makes sense for the Jets in terms of bringing them in a backup role. But that's the one thing that I feel like they still need to be on the lookout for.
No doubt about that here.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Sounds like a blown save is about to happen. That's what it makes me think of. 98.7 ESPN Beach Bash is back Friday, August 20th. Bar A in Lake Como, New Jersey becomes Bar K. Make your plans to head down to the Jersey Shore near Belmar to join the Michael Kay Show live from 2 to 6:30 p.m. with special musical guests, the Pat Roddy Band, an appearance by Willie Wilson. Tune into the Kay Show today for two chances to score VIP access. It's all brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer, Samwell Pain Management, Deep Eddy Vodka, Rutgers Football, Calandra's Bakery, and Youngling Flight. You must be at least 21 years of age to enter. Dan Grasso, Chris Canty here on a Friday. It's DCR. 98.7 ESPN. Those trumpets, the whole Edwin Diaz music, Chris. I don't know. I can't.
It's an adventure with Edwin Diaz, isn't it?
Oh, gosh.
Every single time.
Come on. Think about it. It took a miracle throw and a miracle tag to not have him given another blown save two nights ago. Well, you know what it is? In this town especially, when we had number 42 for as long as we did, just setting the bar that high, everybody is a victim to that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Right? Because you expect to see brilliance every single time out because that dude did it for 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, it is hard to compare all the other closers in the tri-state area to a guy that was the first unanimous nominee into the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, it's just the Sandman was at a different level. But, I mean, we can't help it. As sports fans, like, that's the lens that we view all closers with our New York baseball teams in. You know, that's an impossible standard to be able to live up to. But, I mean, I will say this about Edwin Diaz. He's been much better this year than I thought he would be. I mean, I know last year, you know, he showed signs that he was kind of going to improve from when he was first traded for from the Mets from Seattle. But, I mean, this year, just it feels like he took another step. And he's probably more reliable, more trustworthy than he has been his first couple of years with the Mets.
Yeah, but again, it was so bad.
That's a low bar to clear.
Right. I mean, it's like we were just talking about with the Jets offense this year. It's like, well, you know, you set the bar pretty low the last two seasons that anything, you know, somewhat semi-productive is going to be a step in the right direction. But look, he still makes you sweat it out, as you said. And, you know, we'll see how it goes the rest of the year here for them. This Kelvin Benjamin thing with the Giants. Now, I don't know how much realistically you thought that Kelvin Benjamin would factor into the season for him. Probably very little, if at all. And now he's not even going to get the chance because he was sent packing here. The thing to me, which is just hilarious, are all the stories that come out afterwards as to what the real reason was why he was sent packing and why he left. And, you know, him and Joe Judge, I guess, had it out. And, you know, then he went and told NJ.com that he wasn't necessarily a fan of the Giants head coach and, you know, pointing the finger at everybody else for the reason why he's still no longer on the team. But the stories that are coming out afterwards that... He was, you know, this rumor going around that the Giants got rid of him because he was stealing food from the, I mean, like, I've heard a lot of things, but yeah. I mean, come on, man. And as a guy who, you know, you did this, you know what it's like. Everybody takes food home. I mean, especially during training camp, everybody's taking meals and, you know, things that they need just to get through.
I just like food.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's hilarious to me.
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous. But, I mean, I've been around some coaches who, when guys are overweight or they're on a weight program to try to get down, like, they won't allow them to eat certain things in the cafeteria. So, in my mind, that's immediately what I went to. Like, Joe Judge, because Kelvin Benjamin came in overweight, there were certain things that were supposed to be off limits, and I guess they caught him taking some of the foods that he's not supposed to be eating. But, I mean, This is one of those things Joe Judge is continuing to show us. It's going to be his way or the highway when it comes to how they do business over there at 1925 Giants Drive. And being able to instill that level of discipline is something that this team has been sorely lacking since the end of the Tom Coughlin era. So, I mean, you can appreciate the direction that he's trying to take the program. But at the end of this, there has to be some wins that come along with this type of attitude, this type of approach. Because, I mean, if you're not getting the results on the field after having a couple of years of being able to do things this way, then that act is going to wear thin with the guys in the locker room. Like, they're buying in right now because all of those guys are desperate to win. The Giants have had four consecutive double-digit loss seasons. Like, at some point, you get tired of that if you've been around there for that long. So, I mean, the guys are buying in to everything that Joe Judge is selling. And I will say this. Joe Judge does have that charisma that you would want in your head coach, and he does have that energy, that enthusiasm, so it makes it a little bit easier to buy in, but it's not easy to do what Joe Judge is asking those guys to do. So hopefully the Giants are going to be able to get the results that everybody is looking for them to have, and quite frankly, Dan, this season, there really isn't any excuse for them not to have those results. Like, I'm expecting that this team is going to have a winning season, and that they're going to be in the playoff chase right up until the end of it, and hopefully they end up into the tournament. But, I mean, there are no excuses for this team not to get back to their winning ways.
No, they're a better team on paper than they were last year, 100%. 100%. And I agree with everything you just said. But for a guy like Judge, and really any coach in his situation, right, entering his second year, and we know that he comes from that, you know, Bill Belichick school up there in New England, and everybody wants to kind of be Belichick light or be, you know, young Belichick. You try to make a statement, right? You try to impart the stamp you want to put on this program. Some coaches can get away with that. Some coaches can't get away with that. And I think that in this situation, if you're Joe Judge, you know, you read the room, you read the locker room, you see what you have there. And you have to kind of pick your battles, if you know what I'm saying, right? And I think the Kelvin Benjamin situation to me was one of those opportunities that he decided, all right, if I'm going to talk tough and if I'm going to be a disciplinarian and make sure that everybody's buying into the whole team first thing, you know, I'm going to single guys out who aren't going along the lines of following the program as you would hope. And he looked at Kelvin Benjamin and he saw an opportunity to single out a guy who, let's face it, probably was not going to factor into this season very much, if at all, right? Who knows if he was even going to make the team, given what he was being asked to do. He'd come out of retirement, essentially, and be another set of hands, and oh boy, at a tight end position, which, you know, he didn't break into the league as one. And that's what it was. And he kind of hoped that he would send a message to every other guy in that locker room that says, boy, if I don't fall in line, I'm going to be out of here too, potentially, or I'm going to get called out on the carpet by the head coach, and I'm going to be used as an example. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a veteran in that locker room, okay, you Chris Canty, the NFL veteran, and you see this whole Kelvin Benjamin thing go down the way that it did with a young coach, what do you read into that? How do you read into that? Do you kind of just look at it as, boy, this guy's kind of, you know, biting off more than he can chew, or do you say, oh, shoot, he's not messing around?
No, I mean, I think it's more the latter. Like, he's not messing around. I mean, and you saw it last year in how he dealt with Golden Tate, how he dealt with Mark Colombo. Like, I mean, you're talking about a veteran player that has earned his stripes in this league and a former player turned coach who's been known as really good position coach with offensive linemen. And Joe Judge kind of let both of those guys have it, and eventually the organization moved on from those two guys. Like, Joe Judge has shown, like, if you're not going to be in lockstep with him and what he wants and his agenda, then he's going to be moving on. And when it comes to something like someone like Kelvin Benjamin, who doesn't necessarily feel like a Joe Judge guy, a guy that hadn't been in the league since 2018, like, this is one of those where it's like, unless he did everything that Joe Judge asked him to, and unless, you know, he walked that narrow path, then it was probably going to mean that he wasn't going to be long for the Giants. And that's exactly what happened. Now, I didn't think it was going to happen in the first practice, but that's exactly what happened. I mean, they brought him in, taking a flyer on him. He was a Dave Gettleman draft pick down in Carolina. Right. But unless you're going to buy into what Joe Judge is trying to do, I mean, as a player, if you're going to give him any pushback from that, you're probably not going to be around the Giants. It's probably not going to happen. Now, that all works. That kind of shtick all works for Joe Judge if you're winning games. And I think last year people saw that there were some signs that this team was forming an identity, so we're optimistic about what this team can be, and we like what we've seen, the early reviews from Joe Judge. But, I mean, this year they've got to take another step. And if they don't take that step, then this kind of attitude, this kind of approach could end up backfiring it on the coach.
Guests on DCR appear via the Goodyear hotline, and we're going to talk baseball with Buster Olney coming up in 20 minutes. And, look, it's pretty obvious the NFC East, the way it is, right? I mean, Philadelphia, say what you want about them. Look, the Eagles are rebuilding. They could try to sell you a bill of goods differently, and they're going to try to win games or whatnot, but you know it and I know it. Everybody knows it. Eagles aren't going to be a factor this year. Washington won the division last season. The defense is stout. They got a veteran in there, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who you at least feel a little bit more comfortable as opposed to the quarterbacks they were trying to trot out there last season. But Fitz has his limitations,
yeah.
Right? He's got the experience, but we know that Fitz likes to turn into a pumpkin every so often.
Yes.
You can almost guarantee on that. And
yep.
The other thing that's a part of Fitz's resume is that the dude's never made it to the postseason before.
17 years, yeah.
Right? Even when he had a chance to drive the bus, he's never gotten it to the postseason. Jet fans remember what happened on that final exit in 2015. So, and then you got the Cowboys. Cowboys, I think, are going to be good. Cowboys on paper are a talented bunch. Cowboys on paper are probably the best team in the division, but Cowboys still have a lot of questions given how last year unfolded and given now you're bringing in a new coordinator in Dan Quinn, who you hope it's better than the way the defense performed last year, but there's also questions with Mike McCarthy in this offense as to whether or not maybe the league has gone to school on his offense and on
Dan,
his system.
Dan, it sounds like you're setting me up to make the case that the Giants have the fewest questions of any team in this division. Is that where we're going with this?
I'm not setting you up for that. And I'm not trying to bait you into anything. And I don't even know if that's necessarily true about the whole fewest questions. What I will say, and this is what I was getting to, there's an opportunity for the Giants to make some noise in this division in 2021. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that. How about that?
No, I will agree with that. And here's the thing. I mean, the Giants are a rock-solid football team. I mean, their offensive line is, you know, you hope that it would be better in year two with all of those young guys having the opportunity to get more reps under their belt and having a full offseason that includes OTAs, minicamp, and a training camp with preseason games, having all of that opportunity to kind of gel together. You're hoping that that group is better, and you're hoping that Daniel Jones takes that next step. But, I mean, outside of that, you feel good about all the other aspects of your team. You feel good about the skill position players. You feel good about your front seven on defense. You feel great about your back end. I mean, it should be one of the better secondaries in all of football. So, I mean, this is one of those teams that you gotta keep an eye on. You feel good about the head coach. I just feel like the Giants have all the pieces in place in order to be able to make a run at a division crown. The biggest question, though, is whether or not you can get your quarterback to cut down on the turnovers and take that next step in his development. Because if that happens, if Daniel Jones takes like a Josh Allen type leap, you're talking about the Giants being able to win this division. That's what you're hoping. You're hoping that he takes that kind of step in year three. And they certainly surrounded him with all the talent to be able to do that. But it's going to be up to the kid and whether or not he's going to be able to pull it off. Like, he's got the physical tools. He's got the weapons around him. The offensive line should be better. I mean, Daniel Jones really doesn't have any excuse as to why he can't produce in 2021.
Well, let's be real. This is a make-or-break year for DJ, is it not? This is a make-or-break year because if the Giants end this season with question marks as to whether or not he's still the guy moving forward, they might go out there and get their next quarterback in the offseason. Because remember, you got another first-round pick that you're armed with next season, which you can use to either move up in the draft to get a guy that's coming out of college again next season, or you can maybe use that as some sort of a package to go get a guy on another roster in the National Football League right now. And I don't know if they deliberately learned from the mistake, but I've said all offseason here, and I agree with what you said, that you know they've gone out and they've surrounded him with weapons that they've brought in, the way the offensive line is right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants did for Daniel Jones heading into his third season what the Jets did not do for Sam Darnold heading into his third season a year ago.
No,
think about it.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, all of the things that we wanted the Jets to do for Sam, like going out there and getting them weapons, going out there and fortifying the offensive line, it just felt like they didn't do them, or when they tried to do them, they were a day late and a dollar short.
Right.
And so now it's like Daniel Jones, like all the excuses as to why he can't be an effective quarterback have been eliminated. Like, they've invested in this offensive line significantly.
No excuses.
Yeah, they've invested in free agency and the draft in your wide receivers. You got the second overall pick from 4 years ago in a running back in Saquon Barkley. I mean, there really is no excuse as to why Daniel Jones can't go out there and have success. It is no excuse. So you're hoping that happens. I mean, the kid will have the benefit of having a defense that is one of the better defenses around the NFL to support him, to be able to create favorable field position, to steal extra possessions. Like, there really is no excuse as to why he can't go out there and get it done in 2021 in a weak division.
I mean, they went out there and look, Kadarius Toney, who may or may not pan out, but they used the first-round pick on him when there were probably other areas of need that were greater for the Giants.
Mm.
Clearly. And they said, you know, because they went out and they spent a bunch of money in the offseason. I mean, they gave Kenny Golladay all those bucks. And so they're pretty set at wide receiver. They're pretty good at the playmaking position. They're like, nah, you know what? We can use another one. Why not? Let's bring in another guy. And so they use a first-round pick on him. So it's like an embarrassment of riches right now at the wide receiver position with all these guys. And a guy who, you know, people are sleeping on, John Ross, I've loved this dude ever since he was in college. The problem with John Ross is, you know, he can't stay on the field.
Yeah.
But if he can stay on the field, that guy is somebody who could stretch the field. He's a vertical threat. He's the fastest guy on the field. The question is availability. It's your best ability, but can he provide it to the Giants? If he can, that's another X factor for this offense here. I'm telling you, if they stay healthy, the only thing that would potentially hold them back then would be the play of the quarterback. Because mm-hmm. I think there is more than enough to work with offensively.
Yeah, I don't think you can dismiss the Giants when you start talking about the teams that are capable of winning the division. I think they're right there in that conversation with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, it's ultimately going to come down to the quarterback. But you said something, you know, with the Giants doing what they did in the NFL draft and trading back from 11 and going and letting the Chicago Bears move up to take Justin Fields, they picked up that first-round pick and a fourth-round pick in next year's draft. I mean, they added a lot of draft capital. So if Daniel Jones proves himself not to be the guy, mm-hmm. then they have the ammunition to be able to move up in next year's draft to get another quarterback to take another swing at it, or they can go out and try to make a splashy move for one of those veterans that wants to get out of his current situation. Like, the Giants have multiple pathways to being able to add a quarterback if Daniel Jones turns out not to be the guy. And the great part about it is you already have the infrastructure in place for your quarterback to step in and be able to have success. So, I mean, Daniel Jones, I'm rooting for the kid. I believe that he has the kind of character that plays well in New York. It's just a matter of him being able to go out there and give you the production and win football games. So I hope that can happen with this supporting cast that the Giants have put around him. But, I mean, that's the biggest question that the Giants have coming into 2021. Will Daniel Jones take that next step? Everything else is a distant second.
100%. Live Nation presents Jason Aldean on Friday, August the 6th at PNC Bank Arts Center on Saturday, August the 7th at Northwell Health at Jones Beach Theater. Tickets are on sale right now at Ticketmaster.com, but be caller number one right now at 888-987-ESPN to score a pair of tickets to your choice of PNC Bank Arts Center or Jones Beach Theater. It's all from Live Nation, and you're home for the hookup. It's 98.7 ESPN. Let's go to the phones, CeCe. 800-919-3776. That is the telephone number. Our pal is Iron Staten Island. He's up next here on DCR. What's up, I?
Hey, what's happening, Dan? What's happening, Chris? Good morning. And boy, oh boy, first day of practice today. And man, 2 years since I've been out there. Just, I can't believe I'm actually finishing my workout and ready to go. But, you know, listen, I agree with everything you said about the Giants and Daniel Jones. They did the complete opposite that the Jets did with Donald. But, you know, my concern is the Jets and Zach Wilson. I'm glad they got them done. They got that done. The two practices, no big deal. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what Salah and LaFleur, you know, what they throw at this kid early on. I mean, they might as well just throw the kitchen sink at him. I know you got to bring him along slowly, but they got to get him ready. Let's face it. They only got about 18 practices before opening day. And they got a lot of work to do. I'm glad he's in camp, and can't wait to see him. I don't know if you're going to be out there, Dan. If you are, hopefully I get to say hello. If not, enjoy the day, and just curious in the comments.
I'd be good. Yeah, hopefully I'm going to get out there today to check out everything there. But, I mean, Chris, no-brainer, right? I mean, you got to have him out there. And look, if you go by OTAs and at minicamps, everything that they threw at him then – they weren't holding back any information. They were giving him pretty much everything he needs to know. He's a quick learner. He absorbs the scheme. He absorbs the information quick. That's everything you hear from the people inside that building there. And yeah, I don't think it's a point with Zach Wilson where they're afraid to put a lot on his plate, because this is his offense. This is his team. It's his scheme. And I know he lacks experience, but he's going to have to hit the ground running here, and it starts today.
No question. I mean, he's the day one starter for the Jets. I mean, and you talked about him being able to absorb information quickly and them not holding back in terms of installing the playbook, but it's going to be a matter of him getting out on the practice field and being able to process all the information that he's learning and being able to execute the scheme in real time. Like, that, those are two different things. And I think that's the biggest difference in terms of being asked to play quarterback at the collegiate level versus in the NFL. Like, the ability to be able to process information at the line of scrimmage, understand what you're doing, knowing where to go with the football, because all of those things are happening really, really quickly, and all of the looks from the defense are constantly changing. Like, they're not going to be static like they were in college. You're not going to know, you know, as soon as you get to the line, whether they're in one high or two high. The defense is always disguised. No one is ever where they were at pre-snap, at right after post-snap. So, like, it's just being able to understand all of that, understand what you're supposed to be doing, understand what everybody on the offensive side is supposed to be doing, and then making good decisions with the football. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing that you want them to kind of get a feel for early on in training camp. Being able to operate the offense, being able to get in and out of the huddle, and being able to make sure that everybody gets lined up and everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing, but then also understand what you're supposed to be doing and understanding the different schemes that defenses are supposed to try to throw at you. So it's a lot for a young quarterback, and it's clearly going to be a learning curve. So I'm interested to see how the Jets and Zach Wilson handle that as we move through the preseason.
You know, something else that's kind of I've been curious about, because things are a little bit differently this year, of course, with the new schedule, right? The additional regular season game, you get one less preseason game. How do you think teams are going to handle that third preseason game this year? Like, are they going to approach that as they normally would the last preseason game where none of the regulars play at all? Because the different thing this year is, of course, one less preseason game, but after that last preseason game, Chris, there's another whole week tacked in this year. So you're going to go 2 full weeks from that last preseason game to the opener. So that is a lot of downtime. And especially like with a team like the Jets, and you have a rookie quarterback in Zach Wilson, and he's the guy. Mm-hmm. Don't you think he could benefit from still maybe getting some reps and some snaps in that final preseason game? Because that's only going to be the third one. And then so if he doesn't play in the third, you're talking about like a small sample size of 2 preseason games. Then it would be 3 whole weeks between that second preseason game and the opener against Carolina. You got to figure that, I think, around the NFL, probably some regulars are going to get some playing time in that third game this year, right?
No, I think some will, but you have to take it case-by-case basis. As far as the Jets are concerned, like, yeah, you want to get Zach Wilson as many game reps as you possibly can. You want to have him out there against other teams and just, you know, kind of let him, you know, get a feel for the NFL game because it's a lot faster than the college game. And so knowing that he's going to be your week one starter, you want to get him a lot of reps, but you also want to make sure that you guard against him or any of the other veteran players that you're going to be relying on being injured, right? Like that's the downside to the preseason is worrying about a guy not being able to make it to the regular season. We saw even before the NFL went to a 17-game regular season schedule, you know, a lot of teams didn't play starters in the preseason. Sean McVay and the LA Rams, they didn't play their starters in the preseason at all. Like, they didn't want those guys out there risking injury. They wanted to get them to the regular season. So you got to think, with expanding the regular season, that a lot of the teams will take the approach of, hey, we just want to get our guys to the regular season healthy with the games that matter. That's when we'll put them out there. We don't want to risk anything happening to them beforehand. So I think there'll be two schools of thought. But when you have a young quarterback, when you have a rookie, like the Jets do with Zach Wilson, I can understand your starters getting more reps than other team starters in the preseason.
Yeah, I think it's natural. I certainly think, you know, all the things, the way they align up for the Jets here, it does make a heck of a lot of sense just to give as many reps as possible. Because, I mean, otherwise, you know, it just seems as if, you know, all the novelty, you know, whether it's the new coaching staff, the new offense, the new scheme, you have a player now who is a rookie, it just seemed, you know, all the moving parts on offense. I mean, think about like all the upgrades at the wide receiver position and on offense here.
Yep.
I just think it makes sense. And look, I know you don't want to risk injury. You're fearful of that every time you step out on the field, but that could happen in practice. That could happen in a regular season game. You never want to see it happen, but I guess a preseason game is no different than anything else. I'm not saying go out there and play 60 minutes, but a couple of snaps here and there I don't think is the worst thing in the world.
No, it's not. But, I mean, listen, if you got Zach Wilson out there, that means you have to have your starting offensive line out there.
No
doubt. Might as well have your receivers out there as well. So, I mean, I think that's what you have to take under consideration if you're Rob Saleh in terms of formulating your plan on playing time in the preseason. But, I mean, the Jets are, you know, a relatively young team. So, I mean, you could benefit from getting those preseason reps. Those, like, are game – those are, you know, simulated game reps. I mean, they're not regular season games. It's a different speed in the preseason than the regular season. But it's still an opportunity for your guys to hit somebody else in a different color jersey. So, I mean, I just don't think that you pass up on opportunities for improvement when you have such a young group of guys. So, again, like we said, I think that you'll see – Zach Wilson and the Jets starters probably a little bit more than other teams around the NFL with more veterans on those squads. But, I mean, as far as the three preseason games go, I would say this. I think that the first couple of preseason games, if you are going to play your starters, those would be games you play them. And in that third preseason game, you use that for the guys that are on the fringe of the roster, try to fill out the back end of your team. That's how I would look at it. That's how I would think coaches would approach it because, you know, the closer you get to the regular season, the more and more you're worried about making sure that you get all of the guys that you're going to be relying on to that regular season healthy.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.